This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Jay Hanselman filling in today for Mark Caney, who's taking the day off. 11, 12, 13, no, make it 14 Republicans say they're running for president next year, and at least two more will soon be announcing their intentions. There are just three announced potential challengers to Democrat Hillary Clinton. Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court released two big decisions last week on Obamacare and same-sex marriage, and those are guiding some discussions on the campaign trail. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins me along with political reporter Howard Wilkinson to discuss the political headlines as we head into the 4th of July weekend. You can join the conversation. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, the phone number again, 513-419-7100. Ken, Howard, thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's great.
Jay and Howard, how are you?
Good, good.
You know, when they said Mark was going to be off today and they needed somebody to fill in, I thought, what a great way to get set for the 4th of July to talk politics with Ken and Howard.
Jay, during the break just a second ago, you said you hated the fact that you were doing this, that you couldn't...
Yeah. Well, make up your mind.
I mean, you're not supposed to tell the dark secrets.
You couldn't wait to get away from Howard and me.
Well, you're stuck with us now for the next hour.
That's right.
You know, I think it's too bad... It would be nice if both of you could take turns reading the Declaration of Independence word for word.
Yes.
Oh, wait, somebody's got that covered.
All right. Yeah.
Well, Ken, you always start off with a trivia question, and I'm assuming you've got one for us today.
I do indeed, and here it is. I have two trivia questions, so there'll be two different answers. And when people call in, they have to answer either part A or part B and not both, okay? So two questions.
Okay. Two questions and right. one person and two, for each for yeah, answering
right.
each question.
Right, exactly.
So okay. two prizes today.
Two prizes, that's right.
Okay.
Boy, that
okay,
just blew the budget.
Right.
It's very generous of you.
When John Kasich announces for president on July 21st, he'll be the fourth sitting Republican governor in the race. Bobby Jindal, Scott Walker, and Chris Christie will be the other three. He'll be the fourth sitting Republican governor. Before George W. Bush in 2000, who was the last sitting Republican governor, A, nominated for president, and B, elected president? And those are the two questions.
Okay, repeat those one more time.
I don't think that's possible. Okay, before George W. Bush in 2000, who was the last sitting incumbent Republican governor who was A, nominated for president, and B, elected president?
And when you think you have the answer to that question,
or understand it.
513-419-7100. Again, 513-419-7100 if you think you can answer that trivia question. Again, there's two parts, an A part and a B part, and you can answer either A or B. There you have it.
Right.
And I don't see Howard writing anything down yet.
I'm thinking right now. Before, you did say sitting.
Or reclining.
Right. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've got lots of politics to talk about. And Ken, if you want to run with this idea, that's fine. But I think we have 14 declared presidential candidates, if that's correct.
That's
and
correct.
And Scott Walker, I think I heard today, is going to announce on July the 13th.
Yeah. That's correct.
Right. And John Kasich is going to announce on July the 21st.
Right.
So that would bring us to 16 GOP candidates.
Yes.
I think someone needs to talk to Mark Burnett with Survivor and do the next season of Survivor, the GOP Survivor, and at the end of it, that person will be the GOP nominee.
Well, I would try out for The Apprentice because apparently there's an opening there.
Yes, there is. Yes.
Yes, there is.
And The Apprentice is moving to the other side of the table.
Or else get a contract with Macy's.
Oh, boy. But here's what's remarkable about this. I know that a lot of people roll their eyes and say there are 14 Republicans, but at least they have time until Iowa and New Hampshire in February to get their acts together and get some notice and favorable exposure. But they really only have, for all intents and purposes, until August 6th, which is the date of the first debate, the Fox debate. So with 16 Republicans in the race, Fox says they can only pick the top 10, and they're going to determine the top 10 by their average in the in five national polls. So it's very possible that some significant Republican candidates, including John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, the important, crucial state of Ohio, may not make the top 10. And that, to me, that criteria is just baffling. But suddenly, August 6th becomes a very, very important date for the Republicans.
Is that August 6th date, is that the essentially the first cut of the 16th?
That's the first 16th? Debate.
Well, but, yeah. But is that when some of the people at the bottom six will say, all right, maybe not?
Well, very possible. I mean, you know, I remember in the past, they don't have, this is the first time since it's been created that they're going, getting rid of it, but they have this Iowa straw poll every summer prior to the Iowa caucuses, which is completely meaningless. And yet so many times in history, we saw it with Dan Quayle, we saw it with Lamar Alexander, we saw it with Tim Pawlenty, that they don't do well in this meaningless straw poll in August of the year before the caucuses, and they drop out from that. So I guess everything is media coverage, and if you're not covered in the debate, I don't know how you break through a cast of characters that, again, is Jeb Bush and the fifth. Well, I was going to say Jeb Bush and the 15 dwarfs, and that's not really fair.
That's not, yeah.
It's not fair at all because Jeb Bush is hardly a front runner. But I mean, right. Basically, how do you break through as the alternative to Jeb Bush if indeed he is the perceived leader at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, something's got to weed this crowd out, and this Iowa straw poll. I mean, a lot of these candidates just said, "No, we're not interested. We're not going to play. We're not going to play this game."
Right. That's why they canceled.
That's why they canceled it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
In the past, I mean, it was just so meaningless, and you.
But so many people spent so much money,
$100,000
media
just bussing in supporters into Ames, Iowa, and just for you had to register people at $35 a pop. So basically, it was a pay to play, and it was, again, it had nothing to do with the caucuses, as President Michelle Bachmann taught us in 2011.
Yes.
She won the straw poll, but then finished sixth in the caucuses several months later.
Yeah.
Let's, just because I have it here in front of me and I feel the need to do it from the New York Times, these are the 14 that are in. Bush, Cruz, Paul, Rubio, Carson, Fiorina, Huckabee, Santorum, Pataki, Graham, Perry, Trump, Jindal, and Christie. And then what the New York Times listed as probably were Walker and Kasich, but as we said when we started the show, we know that they're going to announce Walker on July the 13th, Kasich on July the 21st.
Yeah. Kasich's going to announce on the 21st at the Ohio State University, as they like to say, which is where he went to school. And then he's immediately going to do a tour of some of the early primary states. He is going to need a big bump in order to be able to qualify for this August 6th Fox News / Facebook debate. How embarrassing do you think it would be if he just doesn't come up with that kind of bounce?
Well, I mean, he's going to get some attention, but we're talking about, what,
going
2 weeks?
Going from 1% to, two or 3%.
Yeah. And look who's number two in the national polls. Again, we're talking about July of 2015, but it's Donald Trump.
Yep.
Nobody on this planet thinks Donald Trump is going to be the nominee, let alone the president. But, I mean, the more airtime he gives them, and of course, Democrats would love the more we talk about Donald Trump, the better off Hillary Clinton and the rest of the Democrats are. But I mean, it's not the right way to pick a nominee, and I don't know what the answer is when you have 16 people, but I'm thinking you have them all on maybe in like a Hollywood Squares box or something. But otherwise, you can't have them in a horizontal line they'll probably have to run into the debates in Cleveland. You'll have to, the rest of it would be in Akron because the line would be so long.
It's a shame Paul Lynde is no longer with us to
participate.
Right.
That was my Paul Lynde imitation, by the way.
Yeah. That was good, too.
Yeah, thanks.
Has the GOP field ever been this big before?
Not in primary. I mean, in the old days when Howard was young, they used to decide the nomination at the convention, and then a whole bunch of senators and governors and big time members of the parties would say they're available, not that they would be running in the primaries. But I mean, we've had, I think we had at least 10 maybe even 12. So it's not outlandish, although it is much bigger than ever before. But I think we've had 10. I think in 72, when the Democrats were lining up against Nixon, mm-hmm. in 84, when the Democrats were lining up against Reagan, and other times as well, we've seen maybe 8, 10, 11 candidates, but never this large of a number.
Let me ask you both this. What does this do with this many candidates and the different philosophies? What does it do to the Republican Party?
Well, it's going to be a fractured party anyway. I mean, there always have been these groups within the party: the social conservatives, the fiscal conservatives, the libertarians, the mainstream, the internationalists. They're going to have to battle it out. In the end, usually the mainstream Republican comes out on top.
Is that a clear definition anymore?
Hmm?
Is the mainstream definition as clear as it used to be?
Well, I think it is. But, I mean, you know, in primaries, they tend to run towards the right. You have to look at, like, the Republican electorate in primaries. 40% of these people describe themselves as evangelical Christians. They're not going to be very happy, you know, like, they're not very happy with the Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage, obviously. So, you know, these people are running to the right. Somebody's going to win the nomination, and they have to try to get back towards the center.
But Jay asks a very good question here, because what is a mainstream conservative? And the reason I ask that question is because when Jeb Bush was governor for 8 years in Florida, he was the most conservative governor Florida's ever had. And he was a very, very conservative governor. And yet now he's looked at with distrust by the evangelicals and the more Tea Party wing of the Republican Party because of his views on immigration, because of his views on Common Core education standards. And so for some people to say that Jeb Bush is a moderate, and other people say, well, what are you kidding? He was one of the most conservative governors ever. Yeah. And so I think a lot of people have different definitions of what the mainstream is.
They do, yeah.
And we're going to take a break here in just a second. Before we do that, let's get some answers or tries at your trivia question. One more time on the trivia question, Ken.
Before George W. Bush in 2000, who was the last sitting Republican governor, A, who was nominated for president, and B, was elected president?
And there are two separate questions, two separate prizes. So when we take your call, let us know if you're trying for the A part or the B part.
Not both.
And then your guess. Yeah, you can only answer one. And we are going to try Ray in Finneytown. Ray, go ahead.
Hey, I'm going to do part B, and I'm going to guess Calvin Coolidge.
Ken, how about Calvin Coolidge?
When Calvin Coolidge was elected, when Calvin Coolidge became, even though he was the former governor of Massachusetts, when Calvin Coolidge became president, he was vice president, and he became president when Warren Harding died in office. So Coolidge was actually vice president when he became president, not governor.
Yes.
All right, Ray, we appreciate that.
Good try.
Let's try Dave in Sharonville. Dave?
I think it was Mike Dukakis, but he wasn't elected. He was the candidate, but not elected.
And he was not a Republican. But besides that, he was a sitting governor, but of course, as you say, he was not elected president, and he was not a Republican.
All right, thanks, Dave. Let's try Chris in downtown. Chris, go ahead.
Yep, I'm going to go with Ronald Reagan as the elected. I think he might have also been nominated as well, but I'm going to go with elected for Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan was the former governor of California when he was elected president in 1980. Reagan was elected governor of California in 66 and 70. So by 1975, he was out of the governor's office. And of course, 1980 is when he was elected president. So he was not a sitting governor. He was a former governor in 1980.
All right, Chris, appreciate it. Let's try a couple more here before we go to the break. How about Matt in Covington? Matt, go ahead.
I was going to go with Nixon.
Nixon was never governor. He actually ran for governor in 1962, lost to Pat Brown. But, you know, remember him when he said, you're not going to have Nixon to kick around anymore. That's when he lost that election in 62. Never was governor.
All right, let's try one more. And another Matt, this Hello? Matt in Westchester. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I say the part B, so the one that was elected, William McKinley.
William, now this is a very interesting question answer, but it's not correct, because William McKinley was elected president in 1896,
yeah.
In November of 1896, but he left the governorship in January of 1896 because there was a new governor elected in 1895. They had two-year terms in Ohio back then, but he was the former governor by about 10 months when he was elected president in 1896. He was the former governor.
Right.
All right, Matt, we appreciate your guess.
That was a great guess.
And
that's a great guess.
We're going to take a short break. If you think you have the answer, 513-419-7155. More coming up with the Political Junkie, and you can join us with your questions and comments at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Jay Hanselman, filling in today for Mark Haney, who is taking the day off. We're talking all things political with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU's political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join our conversation again, 513-419-7100, or email talk at WVXU. You're also going to find us on Facebook and Twitter. And Ken, one more time on the trivia question. Let's see if we can get a couple more answers in here real quick.
Before Bush in 2000, who was the last incumbent sitting Republican governor, A, nominated for president, and B, elected president?
And two-part question. We're going to have two winners today, and let us know when we take your call if you're taking A, the A part, or the B part. And let's try Mike in Clifton. Mike, go ahead.
Rutherford B. Hayes.
And which part?
He was elected president.
Ken?
Rutherford B. Hayes is the correct answer.
All right.
Yay!
Very good.
And as you well remember...
Fireworks!
No, that was the applause for the fact that Mark Haney's on vacation. It was not the, but anyway, he's exactly right. Rutherford B. Hayes, 1876, was elected president. He was the sitting governor of Ohio when he was elected president in 1876.
And nominated here at a convention right here in Cincinnati.
I did not know that.
Yes.
See, Howard knew something that you didn't.
No, I knew it. I probably just temporarily forgot it.
He's trying to make me feel good.
Okay, Mike, if you will stay on the line, they need to get some information for you, and I think I'm going to attempt to put you back on hold, or I think Pete's going to do that. So, Mike, if you'll hold the line, congratulations. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
With this debate coming up, we're talking August the 6th, I think. I think it was back in 1992, Saturday Night Live did a spoof on the presidential election. It was something debate, something 1992, the challenge to avoid saying something stupid. How important is that going to be for these 16s to immediately not shoot themselves in the foot during the first debate?
Well, I think it's always important. I mean, obviously, you don't want to, you know, say something idiotic and, you know, just totally dash your chances. Although, you know, if you got 10 people, and I'm not sure exactly, maybe Ken knows how long this thing is going to last, but they can't.
90 minutes.
Okay. So you they can't have more than 7 or 8 minutes
right
each to blow up.
But true, but how
if they
how
can't
long
control did... themselves for 7 or 8 minutes, I you know.
Right, but how long did it take Rick Perry to say oops during that debate? All you need is one little mistake,
right.
And you just, I mean, whether it's a real mistake or a perceived mistake, when Gerald Ford said Poland was free in 1976, he meant was the Poles considered themselves free, but everybody said, oh, what an idiot, what a gaffe, what a mistake. So you still, whether it is a mistake or not, if the voters perceive it as a gaffe,
yes,
it's so hard to recover.
How long did it take for Jimmy Carter to say that Amy Carter was consulting him on nuclear?
right, exactly.
Weaponry.
That was in 1980, right, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If this is possible, and if you both want to chime in on this, the 16 candidates, let's break them down, if we can, into the A list, the B list, and then the C list.
Well,
I could start with the A list would probably be, let's figure it out. We'd have Well, we have Ben Carson, and I think that's a fair, he's doing well enough in the polls, even though he's never run for office before, but Ben Carson would probably be in the A-list. I would probably put Mike Huckabee in there, with his two. I'd have Bush, I'd have Scott Walker, I'd have Marco Rubio, I'd have, well, that's five right that's there. You probably have Ted Cruz and Rand Paul.
Rand Paul, I think, yeah, is in that group.
Right, five, and that's seven. And then I guess the battle is who's on. I mean, you have Lindsey Graham, who is polling zero, you know, in those polls, and yet he's a two-term U.S. senator, served in the House, a respected Republican on foreign affairs. You have George Pataki, who nobody remembers. He's the one who took down Mario Cuomo in 1994, but he's been out of office so much for so long, nobody remembers him. I would probably put Donald Trump in that list only because of the polls. People say they like his, you know, he tells it like it is. He's not scripted. God knows he's not scripted. So maybe you have him, and maybe, I don't know. I mean, maybe Rick Perry, maybe Carly Fiorina. If you don't have an all male Republican field, that's not going to look so good for the Republican Party either.
I think you almost have to put Kasich in there too, just because of the fact that if he can break through a little bit, or some of these other guys stumble, the Republican establishment types are going to be looking for somebody like that, and he's got a pretty good story to tell, when he starts talking about Ohio and turning huge deficits into surpluses and cutting taxes and growing jobs. But
nobody's talking about him. I mean, they should.
Yeah, I know they're not. Yeah,
it's
not yet.
He's an important state. He's a two-term governor with a great record to talk about. But if he announces on July 21st, right, and the debate is 2-3 weeks later.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Are people going to, enough for him to move up in the polls by then?
Well, I mean, do you think he makes more sense then for somebody as a running mate, given the importance of Ohio in this thing?
Well, yes, I do. He reminds me, except here's the thing, though. I mean, he has similar problems that Jeb Bush has, that the fact that he supports Common Core education. He's more sympathetic about immigration and the path
expansion
to citizenship. He supports the expansion of Medicare coverage, right?
Medicaid
coverage. So I could say that his heart is in the right place, but the party is in a far right place. And
right,
I don't know if
exactly
those kind of positions can help him in a party that's moved so far to the right.
I think I asked Howard this the other day in the newsroom when we found out Kasich was going to announce on July the 21st.
Yeah.
Why wait so long? Especially if you're trying to get your numbers up so you can be included in this August 6th debate.
Right.
Why wait till July the 21st if you know this is what you're going to do today?
Well, I think he was kind of between a rock and a hard place. I mean, it was in the middle of this the budget fight, where he was fighting with Republicans who run the legislature over the state budget, and he had to get this budget passed. He had a limited amount of time that he could spend, although he spent plenty of time going out to South Carolina and New Hampshire. He's been to, I think, five times, been to Iowa a couple times. But, he had to nail down this budget first before he could, actually go out and do this thing. Now, he's got a lot of people. He's got a 527 committee called New Day for America, which is raising a whole bunch of money for him. He signed up a whole lot of very well-known people in New Hampshire, which is where I think he's going to focus his campaign initially and try to make a breakthrough there, and then hope that he kind of snowballs.
There were so many Republican candidates who were saying, I probably have no chance in Iowa. I am going to look at New Hampshire.
Right.
And I think Jeb Bush is part of that calculation.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
I agree with you that Kasich's best chance for a breakthrough is New Hampshire, but there were so many Republicans with the same exact hopes and philosophy, and it'll be
absolutely
amazing how important New Hampshire is. And we'll be analyzing the results for a long, long time.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, and let's see if we can get our final trivia question out of the way here. It was a two-parter. We've already got the B part, and one more time on the A part, Ken.
The last Republican governor before George Bush who was nominated for president.
And let's try Seydou. I think you have a guess.
Yes. My answer is New York Governor Thomas Dewey with the famous Chicago Tribune article.
And
well,
Ken?
The Chicago Tribune headline, of course, was Dewey defeats Truman
yes.
with the early results. But Seydou is exactly right. It was Thomas Dewey. He was the nominee.
All right. Very good. Very good, Seydou.
Every time I say something, people applaud. It's amazing. But anyway, 1944,
they love
1948.
You.
But he was the incumbent governor of New York both times when he was nominated for president. So that is the correct answer.
It is. And I got that part right. You got me on B, but I got A right. And in 1944, that governor of New York's running mate was
John Bricker,
the governor
from Ohio.
At that time, the governor of Ohio.
The governor of Ohio, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, Seydou, congratulations. I'm going to put you back on hold, and let's try. We have a comment here. Let's try Maggie in Green Township. Go ahead. You're on the air. Maggie, are you there? Maggie must have...
She's with the silent majority.
Yeah. All right. We've talked a lot about this debate on August the 6th. When is the next one?
In September, mid-September, it's a CNN debate. And my understanding is that they're going to have two different debates, which also doesn't work for me. They're going to have a debate with the top 10 and then another debate with the other six. I mean, I don't, you know, why would anybody
right.
watch
this?
The
why, yeah.
The six?
What would you possibly
you,
want to watch the bottom six for?
My exactly. Survivor idea is looking better and better all the time.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, this is kind of absurd. CNN's doing this?
Yes, CNN. Yeah. That's the only two that's been scheduled. And interestingly...
Are they basing it on polls?
They are basing it on polls, absolutely. And what's interesting is that we still don't have a date for a Democratic debate. And
right.
I mean, Hillary Clinton may have a tremendous lead. She certainly has tons of money, and she's doing well in the polls. Although, of course, I know we're only talking about July, and we shouldn't be talking about polls. But Bernie Sanders is creeping up in places like New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. The other day, he drew 10,000 people to a rally in Madison, Wisconsin, which, of course, is a communist country anyway, right. So it doesn't really matter,
yeah.
Or at least Madison is. Yeah. But there's no scheduled Democratic debates either. So I think for some progressives in the party, they're getting a little impatient about that as well.
Yeah.
Let's we'll switch over to the Democrats. I mean, there were 16. We did our best to talk about as many as we can on the Republican side. So running, we have Clinton, Sanders, O'Malley, and Chafee, and
correct.
Then Webb is a maybe, and Biden, as listed by the New York Times thing that I'm looking at, is probably not, and not running is Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Right. And, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before, but, I mean, you have to go back to the 1950s, 1952, and Alvin Barkley. But for incumbent vice president to have an open shot at the presidency and not getting it,
yeah.
It's pretty remarkable. That says something about either Hillary Clinton's inevitability, which, of course, people will question that word, or her standing in the polls, or that Joe Biden is, you know, he'll be 71 years old, or... And of course, look, he's also gone through unimaginable tragedy in the past couple of weeks and months and for much of his life. But it's just remarkable because he ran for president twice in 1987 and then 2008. He certainly wanted to be president, but it just may not be in the cards for him.
I think we could go back to 2008 and maybe 2006, 2007. Folks thought back then that a Clinton presidency was inevitable, or another Clinton presidency was inevitable.
Or a nomination.
Right.
I was among them.
Yeah.
So
I was.
So are we past, and I'm trying, that's what I'm trying to think, is when did Senator Obama make his announcement that he was running in that cycle?
Well, it was early, and a lot of people thought that Obama was perhaps running in 2008 to make some headlines and then make a real run for it in 2012. But there was a debate in November of 2007. NBC or MSNBC ran it, and I remember Tim Russert asking Hillary Clinton a question about illegal immigrants and driver's licenses, and she gave such a convoluted, confusing, and conflicting answer that I remember thinking she may not be the inevitable nominee after all. And more people started talking about, well, what about that Barack Obama guy? So I mean, for the longest time, she was the expected nominee, but there was a time during the debates, and it really wasn't a flub or a gaffe, but it was a very interesting answer that made people think that, there may be more of a contest here than we thought.
So is, I guess, with
they had a much better, the Obama campaign was like a real 21st century campaign. I mean, Hillary Clinton's campaign just missed the boat on using technology, using the social media that was starting to come to the forefront.
But also the kind of states they went. Like Obama realized that the Idaho caucuses, for example, right. I mean, who would pay attention to that in a Democratic primary, but in a Democratic contest? But there were so many states, Republican states, that had Democratic contests that Hillary Clinton was basically ignoring. She was thinking of Texas and Ohio and New York and California, and Obama was looking everywhere, the old Howard Dean 50-state strategy. Yeah. And so he was winning. Right. And there was one point where I think he won 13 or 14 contests in a row because he had his people out in those states early, and Hillary Clinton basically ignored them.
Yeah, and the Democrats didn't have that, winner-take-all type primary. Right. You know, they were proportional. I mean, that's what happened here in Ohio. I mean, Obama managed to pick up delegates even though he lost the state.
And because of that, the nomination battle went on from into May and
right,
June,
exactly.
Which is so remarkable for any kind of presidential contest. Usually it's over before we know it. I remember when in 2000, Al Gore won Iowa and New Hampshire. That was it for Bill Bradley. In 2004, John Kerry won Iowa and New Hampshire. And that was it for Howard Dean and mm-hmm. John Edwards. So most of the time it's over really, really early. 2008 was pretty remarkable.
Yes.
More political talk will be coming up. You can join us with your questions or comments at 513-419-7100. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman, filling in for Mark Haney today. Joining me are political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join our conversation 513-419-7100 or email talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And we have Maggie back on the line. She couldn't hear us earlier. Maggie, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I originally was calling about Donald Trump. It's It's my understanding that the candidates that are going to be selected for the debate in August have to have filed with the FEC and paid all their filing fees, and I don't believe Mr. Trump has done that yet.
There is a requirement of that on that, yeah, under the rules of this thing. Yes, you're right.
Ken, do you know about that?
Well, it was my understanding that all you need to do is have an official announcement with filing fees. I mean, to just declare for president, you don't really need to spend anything. When you enter individual primaries, then there are filing fees. But my understanding is that all they needed was a declaration of candidacy, and that was good enough for to get included.
I'm not sure about that. I think you have to have a committee.
Okay.
Although, didn't he say he wasn't going to take any money? Does he need a committee?
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, you need a committee.
You still have to file with the
FEC,
right?
You have to file with the
FEC,
right.
Yeah.
Maggie, we appreciate the call. We were talking about Hillary Clinton before the break. What about her strategy this time where she made the big announcement in New York and then kind of went silent for, a few weeks and was having these little meetings and businesses and kitchens and...
I think it worked, whatever it did, because, since April, we found out, she's raised $45 million for her campaign committee, and that's a whole lot of money. And apparently, over 90% of it was people giving $100 or less. So this thing was going on, but it was going on the social media, kind of below the radar, where she was just raising a whole lot of money.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was below the radar, because I think from the beginning it was clear. I mean, once upon a time, her campaign was talking about a $2 billion effort, sounds beyond. But I mean, she, like Jeb Bush, there was no question that from the beginning, and also in 2007 and 2008, Hillary Clinton was raising a ton of money. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it depends on how you spend it. And I think that's one of the reasons, why Obama beat Romney and why Obama beat Hillary Clinton in 2008 for the way you spend it. But there's no question that she has the Rolodex, the connections, the history. And of course, let's not forget about the fact of the history that is involved in the possible Hillary Clinton presidency, the first woman. I mean, she makes fun that she'd be the youngest grandmother ever elected president, but she'd also be the oldest grandmother ever elected president. But there is history in the making, and there are a lot of people who, just as the history was made in 2008, love the thought of the history in 2016.
Sure, absolutely.
513-419-7100 if you have a question or comment. And let's go to Stephanie in Dayton. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. I have a quick question. I think that the fact that, I kind of wonder what you guys think, the fact that Kasich is coming in after this first debate or won't be able to participate in the first debate kind of helps him a little bit, because I think Trump is really going to attack these other candidates in a very deleterious manner, and that could possibly help Kasich look a lot more moderate, look a lot better in the field. And what about Walker? Will Walker be able to participate in the first debate? Those are my questions.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Howard? Well, Walker announces on July 13th. Yeah. He has tons and tons of money.
Right.
In many polls, in Iowa, he's still leading. The last time I saw a poll in Iowa, he's very popular there. And he's been raising on his behalf, conservatives have been raising money ever since the recall election against him, the failed recall election against him in Wisconsin in 2012. So he's been kind of quiet lately. He's still battling with his fellow Republicans in the legislature. We're talking about what Kasich's problems have been in Columbus. Walker has them too, but Walker should be involved in it, and it should be part of the debate. But I think Stephanie makes a very good point in the fact that Trump is basically a loose cannon, and he spends more time attacking the Rick Perrys and the Jeb Bushes and everybody else as he does President Obama and those poor Mexicans. But you want to sit there and get hammered by Donald Trump. But a short answer to the question, though, I'd rather be in a debate than not, because everybody will be talking about it for the rest of the month of August.
And the thing about John Kasich is, you have to remember where this is going to be held. This is going to be held in Cleveland at Quicken Loans Arena, in the very arena where the Republican National Convention is going to be held next July. And in his state. And if he's not in that debate, that is not going to look good.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Again, we're talking politics today with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. A couple of major Supreme Court decisions last week. Let's talk about, actually I flagged three of them. The politics of the decision on same-sex marriage. Howard, what does that mean politically for candidates left or right?
Well, I think with the Republican candidates, obviously, you know, they were most of them, came out very strongly saying that this was the wrong decision. Some of them qualified by saying, but, you know, that's the law of the land now. It was interesting in the Kentucky governor's race. Matt Bevin, the Republican candidate for governor, was and is a very strong opponent of same-sex marriage. And when this decision came out, he came out attacking his Democratic opponent, Jack Conway, who is the Attorney General of Kentucky, saying, "You did not go to the Supreme Court and defend Kentucky's law banning same-sex marriage. And Conway said, no, I didn't, because I didn't believe in it, and I thought it was a waste of time, a waste of money. But Bevin's going to make a campaign issue out of that. And in Kentucky, which is a pretty conservative state, that might have some kind of impact.
Well, it's a conservative state, though it never seems to elect Republican governors,
no,
even though it always elects Republican senators. But in the presidential race, you're absolutely right, Howard. I mean, Jeb Bush said, look, and Marco Rubio said the same thing, and Ben Carson said it too. Look, I think this is a mistake. I believe that's, that marriage is between a man and a woman, one man and one woman, which is what Obama and Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden said as recently as 2008. But anyway, but they say, but it's still the law of the land, whereas Scott Walker and others, Bobby Jindal and Mike Huckabee, they're talking about a constitutional amendment that would basically allow the states to have their own bans on same-sex marriage, which is so contrary to the way public opinion is moving in this country. Now, it's just, I don't remember ever seeing an issue as, like same-sex marriage that public opinion has shifted so quickly, whereas back in, as recently as 2004, you only had one state that legalized same-sex marriage, and that was Massachusetts. And now, as of last week, it's all 50 states.
What about, let's do the same thing, the politics of the Obamacare decision. And that basically is that the federal exchanges set up in states were typically led by Republicans, where they didn't set up their own exchanges, that they can still get subsidies to pay for the health insurance if they're taking them through the federal exchanges.
Well, I mean, I think it left, you know, the Republicans still have this campaign issue of, you know, this thing is costly, it's a burden on people, it's taking away choice in health care. And they're going to run against Obamacare no matter what the Supreme Court does, you know, with a handful of words in a very long document.
We know that the Republican Congress is not going to get rid of Obamacare when the guy in the White House is has the name of Obama.
Right.
But having said that, Ted Cruz is convinced that this is going to be a big issue, that the issue of the 2016 election will be on Obamacare. But you can make the case, well, the 2012 election was supposed to be a referendum on Obamacare as well, and we know how that turned out. So I don't know why it would be any different in 2016.
Yeah, I agree.
One final case that came out, I believe it was Monday, where the Supreme Court said that Arizona could have an independent commission draw congressional districts. And that could maybe have some impact on what some folks consider gerrymandering among politicians of various states as they carve up congressional seats.
Sure. I mean, there have been a number of attempts in Ohio to get that sort of thing passed. It's been on the ballot several times, and it's always gone down to defeat. I think it might, you know, that Supreme Court decision might fuel the fire a little bit more, you know, among the people who want to see a change in the way that congressional and state legislative districts are drawn.
Ken?
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree. I mean, obviously, it's really only involving Arizona. In 2000, voters in Arizona supported a independent commission to draw the congressional and state legislative lines, and the Republicans who control the legislature say, wait a second, this is not fair. The Constitution gives us the right to set elections the way we the legislature, the way we want. So the Arizona Republicans went to the Supreme Court, lost, and now, as Jay said in his introduction, a lot of people who were just opposed to this the gerrymandering that you see in so many states around the country that might give impetus to other similar efforts, but you still have to get it on the ballot. And, you know, if you have a solidly Republican or a solidly Democratic state, I don't think these legislators want to give up that power at all.
But I think, in Ohio, I think they could, if there were groups came together, a coalition of groups came together and did a petition drive, that they could get it on the ballot.
It is pretty remarkable in Ohio, given that the difference between Democrats and Republicans is not that great, how the disparity between Republican congressional seats and Democratic congressional
unbelievable.
Seats.
Unbelievable. Right.
It's like North Carolina. It's just remarkable.
Yeah.
Well, there was a piece on Morning Edition. It was either the end of last week. No, it must have been this week. dealing with President Obama and how he's speaking a little bit more freely and a little bit more frankly. And I think it followed the funeral in South Carolina on Friday, where he broke into Amazing Grace during the funeral service. Do White House officials have to cringe a little bit now that maybe he's speaking perhaps a little bit too freely?
Well, I would make the case that he's been almost too often, he's been too professorial and mm-hmm. too careful
right.
and too cautious in most of his 6-7 years as president. I think when you have something unbelievably horrific as you had in Charleston, that you want a president to say, I mean, the way Clinton would do it, the way Reagan would do it,
yes.
Obama has got to speak from the heart, and he's certainly done that. The sadness is that it's been happening too often. There's been too many terrible tragedies, Charleston, Sandy Hook, Aurora, Gabby Giffords, all these things, and nothing seems to change. I will say, though, that the public opinion on the Confederate flag, that's another remarkable change from the fact that, oh, it's no big deal, to, wow, this is pretty racially offensive. I had no idea. So that's changing as well.
Jim from Roosevelt called in and wanted this question asked: what is the true independent candidate if Bernie Sanders is a Democrat?
Well, Bernie Sanders is still an independent. He is not a Democrat. Matter of fact, there's a possibility he may not get on the ballot in New Hampshire because the law says you have to be listed as a Democrat, and he's saying, no, I'm an independent, but he may. But look, you know, for all, I mean, when you think of independents, you think of all the people who ran, unlike your John Anderson or George Wallace or Strom Thurmond or something like that, independent third-party candidates really don't make a difference anymore. People can turn and say, well, Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader got 1% of the vote in 2000,
Damn.
But of course he got enough in Florida to hurt Al Gore. But for the most part, there are no independent candidates. There are no third parties, you know, worth a lick because they're not in the debates. And if you're not in the debates, nobody pays attention to
right.
you, which is part of that Catch-22. I mean,
Ross Perot was the last one to be able to manage to do that.
Right, and that's because he had $60 million, exactly.
Sure. Exactly, yeah.
Before we run out of time, let's not ignore the Ohio Senate race next year. There's two Democrats running, former Ohio governor and Congressman
yes.
Ted Strickland, current Cincinnati council member P.G. Sittenfeld, and the winner there will have the right to take on current Republican Senator Rob Portman. If you look at polling, it clearly P.G. Sittenfeld has an uphill battle to be the Democratic nominee.
Putting it mildly, Jay, yes.
And Howard and I have had this conversation. What is his end game? What is his strategy here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, all I know is what the man says. The man says he's in it for good. He's going to stay. He's going to give Democrats an alternative. At some point, though, if he cannot raise the money to be competitive with Ted Strickland, who is a well-known figure, who has the endorsement of the Ohio Democratic Party, the National Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, Bill Clinton, Sherrod Brown, everybody else, and he's going to have all the money that he needs. At some point, possibly, Sittenfeld is going to have to find some kind of way out. I don't know what it is, to tell you the truth. But, you know, he says he's committed to this thing.
And he's being ignored by both sides. If press releases come out, Strickland is talking about running against Portman, and Portman's talking about running against Strickland.
Right. And you know, for the most part, you know, that's what they do. I mean, they're assuming that Ted Strickland is going to be the opponent. And Ted Strickland, in some of the polling, has a lead over Rob Portman at this point.
Kim, what's your take on, even though you're not here in Ohio, the potential Senate race next year?
Well, what's remarkable to me about it is that I don't see anything that Rob Portman has done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
I think he has a very moderate record. I think he has certainly you can make the case that here's why I deserve another term, and you go on and list the things. And yet, as Howard just pointed out, the last poll I saw with either dead even or Ted Strickland with a slight lead, and
right.
I don't know what it is why Portman is in trouble, or if he's in trouble. I know Republican leaders are nervous about it, but again, I'm going to have to look at that a little longer because he seems like he's doing everything right.
Yeah.
And it's not really an anti-Republican year, so I don't know.
I think some of it is just that Portman has not made enough of an impression on people. You know, he is kind of low-key, he's kind of, you know, kind of quiet, and he doesn't make that kind of impression on folks.
He's a smart guy.
He's a very smart guy.
And we are going to have to leave it right there. I've been talking with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You'll find links for the political junkie at WVXU.org. Ken and Howard, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Kevin Rowinski. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Jay Hanselman. A pleasure to fill in today for Mark Haney. This is 91.7 WVXU.